roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home in Mountains Edge, Las Vegas, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. And I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the Devious and Dastardly Goz, RA's co-host. What up, Goz?
What's up?
Not much. Cranking it out on a Monday, early Monday here, July 27th. And can't wait to dive in. It was a huge card. 15 fights this past Saturday in Abu Dhabi. And it culminated the 15-day four-event run for the Ultimate Fighting Championship with a card that was headlined by Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. So we're going to definitely unpack the card. We're probably going to have to like maybe just breeze through a few of the results and maybe get to the juicy stories. You know, the ones that obviously involve the bigger names. There's a retirement, a very likely retirement, a possible retirement, a possible free agent who already knows the destination isn't to return to the UFC. A former champion, you know, trying to get back into the mix, and of course the main event. None of that even touches the main event. How about a new superstar in the making? 2 fights in 10 days. I'm telling you, there's a lot to talk about here.
Not to mention, Bellator's back.
Bellator's back, and Man United's back in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll touch on all of that here. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio here, Monday morning style.
Damas y caballeros, hablemos MMA con Danny Segura.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura here. Just wanted to drop in and tell you about a new show coming to MMA Junkie. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language podcast dedicated to all things professional fighting. On this show, we'll be covering the biggest news and topics of MMA, plus highlighting the most relevant stories happening in the growing Latin American scene. Hablemos MMA will also feature interviews with some of the best fighters, coaches, personalities, and experts in the game. You can find us every Monday on your favorite podcasting platform, starting July 27th. Talk to you then.
So let me go through the prelims first. Then we'll always circle back to what stood out, because I'm telling you, there was a lot. And it was a lot, is all I can say. It started off with bantamweights. Nathaniel Wood defeated John Castaneda. Decision, unanimous, 30-27 across the board. Wood was just the better fighter. Just Castaneda was coming from another promotion, and he definitely didn't embarrass himself, that's for sure. It's just tough to fight late notice against a solid veteran. Ramazan Emiev defeated Nicholas Stoltz. Now, that one got exciting because Emiev was a big, big favorite, and Stoltz had landed this huge knee at the end of round one, I believe, and so we didn't know how round one could be scored. We knew round two went to Emiev, and then round three, of course, when, you know, I'm not saying it was a barn burner, but when you enter round three arguably 1-1, then anything can happen. So in this case, Emiev won unanimously, but one judge did give him that 10-9 in round one. The other two just said, nope, it was a blowout. Pani Khanizad defeated Betch Correa. These ladies threw down. Both of them went home looking a little less attractive than when they entered the octagon. Both veterans.
Good fight, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they took it to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they went out there and they earned their checks, that's for sure. Now, look, it was sloppy at times, but I think we've all figured out that sloppy can be a form of entertainment nowadays for many people. Why do you think those YouTube street fight videos can just put you on the edge of your seat. I mean, those aren't professional fighters, but if it's two people that resemble the same two people on your block that always get into it, you're like, yeah, this reminds me of something. Anyway, Tanner Bowser defeated, I almost sounded like Dan Tom, Tanner Bowser. If you catch his podcast, the Protect Your Neck podcast, he always goes into these funny voices, and that's one that cracks me up. He defeated Rafael Pessoa via punches. Pessoa's, look, both of them were waiting for the other guy to get going. So even though they were heavyweights, I wasn't on the edge of my seat very often. They just didn't want to connect. Pessoa had that blitzing style. I think he only blitzed one time. Bowser, just, you know, when he does crack, I mean, obviously he's dangerous. He's a little bit more of the undersized type, but he reminds me of one of those hockey goons, goes. He's missing his tooth, you know, he's kind of direct and to the point. I find him entertaining.
Doesn't like being asked certain questions.
Yeah, and then he's got the whole, you know, Maurice Green, enough already, that whole deal going. So, folks, give him the fight. But he went out there and he won. He won. Next up, Movar Evloev versus Mike Grundy. Now we get into the fifth fight, fourth decision, 30-27. You know, look, respect to a lot of the Russian fighters, or we'll call them the Eastern European fighters, because they come from everywhere. And I think, you know, a lot of people say, watch, look at the nose. You know, if you could tell if they've broken their nose and they just basically have grown up all their life wrestling and putting their head into someone else's head, and they obviously are a tough, grindy style, and they look like they're built like bricks too. But if you don't know English and you don't throw at least a little bit of hands, it's just going to be hard, or finish or throw a little bit of hands. We're going to come away saying what I said. Evloev defeated Mike Grundy, and off we go to the next fight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
It's what happened to PFL. Tough. A lot of their fighters. Yeah. You know, that style, can't speak English, can't really say anything. You just forget about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, none of us have time to record in our heads stuff that doesn't appeal to us. We can try. Have you ever had someone just tell you, hey, I'm going to make up a show. Hey, The Witches of Las Vegas, you got to check it out. And so right away, you're like, that title for some may not be too catchy, but tell me about it. You know, oh, it stars these three witches and they're all former cheerleaders. And then you might perk up, right? You might go, oh, really? You know, you might crack up. What's going on here? Yeah. You know, and then they do this and they go on the strip and they gamble. And now you're like, wait a minute, I gamble. I like cheerleaders. What day is it on? You know, like, you're hoping they say it's just 30-minute episodes. Unless you really like the show, then you're wishing it was you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, all that info just starts coming to you, and then they may get you to watch it, and then that pilot better be good, and then all of a sudden, boom. If it's Netflix, you binge over a weekend. If it's weekly, you just record it to tape. That's what these guys have, guys and gals. They have this sort of a tryout with you. And if it works, you make note. Hey, well, he's back. He's fighting again, huh? She's fighting again? Oh, cool. You know, and you make it a point. And I think the promoter also sees that vibe on social media. They also understand what everyone's Googling. And then they decide to place certain fighters in certain parts of the card. And then that's the making of a star, man. You know, something like that, I guess. Are there T-shirts flying off the shelves? Are they being tagged on hashtag Yaz Island 3 or whatever they're on? Are they being Googled? Are their phones blowing up? I think that's what it just basically boils down to. And I know. It's not easy to finish somebody. Okay, well, but you see some at least going for it. But anyway, that's my little rant on the first five fights. Bowser did his. The rest, not that they didn't fight, but I just think some of them get lost in the shuffle.
They're going to believe us, but there's a show called Sin City Witches.
No shit.
Yeah.
I literally just made that up.
Uh-huh.
What's it about?
Come on.
Cheerleaders?
No, witches.
Well, I know, but like old, like the Wizard of Oz witch?
Oh, I don't know. I just Googled it because I had a feeling just life is so dumb right now that there probably is that show, and mm-hmm. there was something similar.
Okay. Well, you remember that one show that had Shannon Doherty and
Charmed?
Yeah, they were all witches, but they were all pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, at least that might get you in the door, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, Tom Aspinall defeated Jake Collier. Collier moving up a few weight classes there. He got smoked in round one. Aspinall had this Frank Mir look to him. It was kind of funny. And he was really, really calm. He had the accent. I just heard our dog. Had the accent going on. And he's laying on his back, just kind of like having fun. But it was funny because I was thinking, he does look like a younger version of Frank Mir, you know? Kind of had a little like bushy hair a little bit. And then tattoos almost in the same place as Mir. And then I think Shamadkar Sandhu or somebody not beat me to the punch, because I don't think I was going to tweet it, but I think it may have even flashed, or a few people in the chat I was in may have said it was kind of cracking me up. But he looked good, man. Tom Aspinall went out there and he looked good. He did his job. He got the finish. And, you know, he gave a decent interview. So that's a guy I made a note of. You know, it helped that he kind of looked like Frank Mir, though.
I think there's been a few people in this little era that have made a little bit of impression, but not too many have blown us away. And we'll probably get to one that will.
And this was the time to do it, because there was no opposition to other mainstream sports, no Bellator, no reason to go, wait, was he at one? Was he at LFA? You know, like, no, the only game in town was UFC up until like a few weeks ago when the other one started chiming in. Jesse Ronson defeated Nicholas Dalby. Now, Dalby's a guy that he was a favorite, A, and B, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Ronson came in and beat him and looked really, really good. And then he had a nice post fight as well.
I fought in a long time.
I made a note of, you know, I was like happy for him. I made a note of like, okay, cool. I want to see his next fight. Mm-hmm. It also helped that he beat Dalby. See, Evloev and Emiev might be saying, well, I didn't have the same benefit. I beat Stoltz and Grundy, you know, and you're right. I guess beating them isn't as big of a deal, I guess, as beating Nicholas Dalby. So maybe that's part of it too. Who knows? But I'll get to the contrarian example in just a sec. Then we get to Francisco Trinaldo versus High Herbert, and that fight ended in the third round via TKO punches. Now the fight was pretty decent, actually. It could have gone either way. Herbert also hurt Trinaldo. However, the controversy behind it is what's really, really blowing up. So what I wanted to do is stop there and just say, Goes, do you have any reaction to the prelims or like a shark to blood? Do you want to talk about Herb Dean, High Herbert, and Francisco Trinaldo? Yeah,
yeah, let's get to that.
All right. So, well, that was the end of the prelims, folks. And in this fight, Francisco Trinaldo hit Herbert with a, well, we'll go with last names. Trinaldo beat Herbert. Knocked him down kind of like with an overhand left, if I'm not mistaken, and it kind of swatted him on the side of the head. And then Herbert had this reaction where, like, he fell, but then all of a sudden he fell back like someone in the audience had shot him too, you know? It was this weird flip. But when he fell on his back, he wasn't just laid out like if someone had shot him. When someone shoots you, I guess, I've never been shot, but your arms are sprawled out, you know? You're wondering, is that person dead, I guess. Whereas Herbert fell down, but there was a reaction with his arms, his posture, that led you to believe, uh-oh. Now, in that process, Herb Dean in that funny little – have you seen it enough times? Mm. Have you concentrated on Herb Dean's little hop? Yeah, he gets there, and he's looking right down on Herbert. Francisco Trinaldo kind of feels like it might be a walk-off, and he doesn't know whether to slug him or not. He's cocked his left arm back. And he wants to throw it, but Herb Dean hasn't signaled for the end of the fight. Now, where this ties in is the announcers are directly behind Herb Dean. And you can see Dan Hardy already standing up. He's concerned that this fight is over. And Paul Felder, who shares the same concern, you could see him. They're kind of separated by partitions, but they're there, except Hardy's obvious because he's standing up. And Francisco Trinaldo's first punch is pretty solid. Now we begin the sequence of when Francisco Trinaldo does actually rain down ground and pound. First one's pretty solid. The next two aren't as flush, but by then, Hardy has already started to really voice his concern, going so far as to yell, stop the fight. Mm-hmm. and he was so animated in it that by the time the fight was over and it was his time, it was his duty to interview the winning fighter, he had just finished an exchange with Herb Dean that can be overheard on the broadcast. And I don't know the exact details. Like, I wasn't able to make out anything other than you do your job and I'll do mine. But they had gotten, you know, you see other people's social media, and then John Morgan was also there, and he's saying that they did get close and exchanged words. But that folks, is what seems to be one of the bigger stories coming out of this fight card. In the end, how do I see it? I see it as when Herb... I'm going to go off first what I saw live. What I saw live was I thought Herb was okay to let it keep going. And then when he stopped it, maybe a punch late, because that first one was pretty flush, and him just laying there and the whole hesitation. I mean, I don't know. That already told us it was a serious situation. But you know me, man. I respect the refs a lot. I think they got the best view. And Herb has many years and many fights of experience under his belt. I don't see how any of us could basically overrule him in any way, you know. I don't even care if that's Goh's fighting or my mom fighting. We know the dangers going in, and if that's how Herb called it, he called it. I might be yelling stop the fight, but it doesn't mean Herb is wrong. And again, Herb is blocking Dan's view. All right, it just goes to show you how much better Herb's view was. Herb in no way has even said anything like me where I go, I'm on the longer leash, fight to the day. Any joke I may have cracked in the past 13 years, I've never heard Herb say any of that stuff. He really strikes me as a notable man, a notable ref, a notable martial artist. So I'm okay with everything, even after seeing it in slow motion.
Yeah, my opinion of what I saw the night of versus going back and watching replays really didn't change all that much. The punch knocks him down, but right away, he leads you to believe that he knows where he's at based on his reaction, and that's one arm up and one knee up to protect himself. So if I'm Herb Dean, I'm thinking right away, this guy knows where he's at. You know, he could be just dazed right now. How many times have we seen guys get dazed and come back, right?
Right.
So you got to let that play out.
Whitaker chicken-legged.
Yeah, so I think one thing that hurt the whole situation was just the way Trinaldo tried to do the walk-off. You know, the little slow walk. Had he just followed up, I think everybody, this all would have played out normally. But he tried to do the walk-off, and it just didn't work out. And so once he started with the aftermath, you know, the punches, it's not the worst ground and pound you've ever seen. We've seen guys' heads bounce off of the mat. I mean, like, he's protecting himself. Their shots getting through. Maybe it was one punch late, if you have to criticize Herb Dean. But I think he had to give him an opportunity.
Happening. Yeah, that's the one you're talking about. We had to see it like three or four times, a few different angles. And then we're saying maybe that last punch. And that's only because we saw it in slow motion. In the sequence, remember, if there's a punch, we'll call it four punches, A, B, C, and D. If punch number C is what really hurts somebody, and the referee goes, oh, and as he moves in to stop the fight, if he can't get to you and D lands, I don't know that that's the ref's fault. Because there's got to be the human reaction of also giving them. It's not like he's right on time. It's not like Trinaldo's giving him a piggyback ride, right? He's close enough that he can maybe interject, but also not close enough that, you know, these guys are wailing on each other, man. So, and think about how fast four punches can come raining down. I did see one, there was one last angle that I saw, and the fourth punch, I believe, or the last punch we'll call it, did kind of look ugly because it landed, boom, flush on the face. But I think I know what I remember was that Herb was already reacting. You know, it's kind of tough to stop almost the last punch.
Sometimes,
sometimes they get in there just in time to deflect the body. Like they'll just do like a hockey check or something, or they can grab him. But sometimes if you can't get there, that last punch slips in. But that's because the fighters punch so fast and so hard.
What I don't like was, if you watch the replay, Herb seems to react off of the yelling of stop the fight. It seems almost instant. When he hears it, he jumps in. I don't know if he was going to do that anyway. I have to imagine he was. But it's just not a good look. That's not Dan Hardy's job. Dan Hardy's job is to be a commentator. I get it. You're a former fighter. You're passionate. But there are other people in place to handle this situation.
And that guy has a corner. If we were in a normal arena, we wouldn't have been able to hear Dan Hardy because everybody would have been yelling. Mm-hmm. It's just that right now, under the circumstances of the pandemic, they're in empty arenas with no crowds. I shouldn't say empty, but you know what I mean. Just the necessary people there. It's pretty quiet. And I think that's why Dan was heard. If you guys heard our interview with John Anik on Sportscaster a few weeks ago, he was saying that Jacksonville was worse. They could hear everything. Now they have some partitions and they're situated a little bit further. And maybe there's a few more people that are being allowed. But, yeah, Dan wouldn't have even been able to be heard. But Herb was exactly saying that. He defended his stoppage on his social media. He kind of put out a little bit of a statement. What he said was that, I'm just going to go straight to the quote. What I really want to get into right now is, during the match, someone yelled, stop the fight. Dean said on his Instagram, it's really interesting because there's only professionals there and there's not one fan in the building. Everybody has a job there. Everybody knows what their job is and they have specific duties. I have a job to referee the fight. One of my duties is to stop the fight when the fighter is taking too much damage. There's two people who are authorized to advise me during that, to maybe yell out those words, stop the fight. There's one, the physician. We have a ringside physician who knows more about the physical body than I do. He's there to give me advice. If he can't get my attention, maybe he might yell, stop the fight. Then there's the fighter's corner. They train with him. They know about them. They know more things about him than I do. They may know something I don't, so that's why they would give me some advice to stop the fight. Ultimately, to stop the fight is my decision. I don't know who it is, who did it, because I was looking at the fight and I heard it, so I assumed it was either of the two people authorized to do it, the doctor or the corner. And that was his quote. I understand his point. I'll just read the whole thing here. It says, after the match, I followed up. I asked the physician. The physician said, no, that fight was fine. You were doing your job perfectly with everything you did in that match, Dean said. That's what the doctor told him. This is Dean talking. I didn't get a chance to ask his corner, but I asked the inspectors who are in charge of his corner, and they said, no, the corner did not yell out to stop the match. That means it was someone else there to do their job. This is a very dangerous thing to do if you put on your Superman shirt and then decide that you're the smartest person in the room, smarter than the physician, smarter than the corner who works with the guy, smarter than the referee. There's a chance you could bring in information that could do a fighter a disservice. I'm looking at the match. I believe I'm getting information from the people qualified to do it. Under no circumstance would I, even as a referee, get up and yell to another referee to stop the match. If I were to do that, I would know that there would be a situation where I couldn't live with myself otherwise. Well, did that leave an opening for Dan?
Maybe.
Did Dan feel like he couldn't live with himself otherwise? I know there could be consequences. You would never see me in that position again, but I would sleep well knowing that I had done that. I still side with, you got to trust these guys and gals that do the job. They have the best vantage point and they really hardly miss anything. Whereas I think sometimes commentators do, they'll even jokingly say they look down at their notes, or maybe from looking at the monitor up to the cage or at each other, they've all been upfront and honest, mm-hmm, that they've missed it. I don't think referees miss too much. Man, honestly,
I think you could scream out stop the fight if something like a guy's eye fell out or was hanging out, like something like that, that you just know you can pinpoint. There's no way that individual can continue, and maybe the referee doesn't see it because it's on the other side or something like that. But this is just somebody trying to do somebody else's job is what it is.
Right. Well, I told you about that fight in Hawaii, right, when Scott Junk loaded up that. Yeah, and I saw that guy's skull cave.
Mm-hmm.
I yelled it. Now, I had been given a great ticket by the late Ryan Bennett, so I was behind him. I was actually, right behind him and Phil Baroni. And then Bruce Buffer was kind of hunched over as well because he was the announcer. So I can't remember if he was sitting or if he was getting ready to enter the cage. But I remember we all saw it, and then he loaded up, goes, I'm telling you, like The Rock when he spits in his hand and gives you that last slap. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of how I remember it. And then, whack, he did it. And it was Larry Landless was the referee. Man, that was brutal. I've never seen anything like that, dude. I mean, I guess now I have. I mean, not in person, but with MVP's knee.
Oh, yeah.
How that actually was way worse. Like,
MVP's knee
skull.
Was worse?
Oh, yeah. Seeing what the skull, how pressed in it was. This, I saw it cave in from, I had to guess, 10 feet, 12 feet out. I couldn't have had a better seat, and it kind of happened in the middle of the rings or octagon. Wait, was it a ring? I can't remember. Anyway, but yeah, I remember we all yelled stop the fight as well. I think that's just a natural reaction. So,
but you're not working.
We're not working, but Herb, I guess, could apply that to us. Hey, you're not the physician and you're not the coroner. You shouldn't be saying anything. But I think we'd all be saying, we're concerned fans. Someone's getting fucked up. Mm-hmm. But again, in a crowded arena, I don't think they could hear
that's
it.
That's no different than a fan yelling foul or something like that during a game. Like, you can't worry about the fans.
Yeah.
You can't tell the fans, you can't say this, you can't do that. But in this case, it's a guy that works. He's part of the event.
The UFC has said that they're going to investigate it. I don't know what that means. And then one point you made yesterday was a good point, was Herbert kind of got up quickly and was on his feet. And so he wasn't too jacked up, I guess.
Yeah, if this is as bad as everybody's making it sound, then you would probably have that situation where the fighter's barely able to stand. They're trying to help him over to the stool.
And the slow motion makes it look worse. So when the announcers go, look. Whoa, look at this one. Whoa. Remember when Joe Rogan like 12, 15 years ago said, look, watch this one. There's 5 seconds. 1, 2. And everybody gave him shit because it was like, wait a minute, that was a slow motion replay. Like, you know, in fast motion or in regular speed, it doesn't go like that. But anyway, yeah, that's the whole situation there, folks. Anyway, continuing on. Let's talk about the main card. All right, real quick shout out. Don't forget today, Hablemos MMA dropped with our colleague Danny Segura. He interviewed Irene Aldana. You can hear about her pullout of her fight versus Holly Holm and the details behind it. She did get infected with coronavirus, with COVID-19, I guess I should say. So check it out, Hablemos MMA, on all of the different platforms, just like our show, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. So goes Khamzat Chimaev defeated Rhys McKee. Now, Khamzat has probably broken his nose back in the day. Khamzat can wrestle like a mofo. Except Khamzat, A, knows a little bit of English. Kind of has a little bit of charm to him. But he goes out there wrecking shop. You know what I mean? He goes out there and you can tell he's not trying for writing time. Or to score points with little taps to the ribs or anything like that. He's going out there to destroy. Yeah. Who isn't excited about Khamzat Chimaev?
I don't know. I mean, look at what the guy did in such a short period of time and the way he fights. I like him, but I'm not ready to say, look out, everybody at the top. This guy's coming. Like, I think I still need to see a little bit more of him, but he looks great so far.
I think I'm ready to say that.
You are?
No, I'm not ready to say, Kamaru, you better start moving up the middleweight. I'm not saying any of that. You're right. The top guys are the top guys for a reason. But what he's showing me right now, like you can tell, I think he'd be competitive for sure. That doesn't mean he would beat Covington, Woodley, Usman, Masvidal, we don't know, because a lot of times those wrecking machines, they've been wrecking machines because no one's even shown a glimpse of being able to stomp them. But sometimes when someone can, and then there's that big exhale, like, oh, I wasn't able to do what I normally do. I'm in a fight. You know, it's that whole reaction to adversity. And I hate to take a shot at the guy because I really, really like him. But maybe a little bit of that happened with Max Rashkov a few weeks ago. He's kind of been a wrecking ball, you know, all over Vegas. You know, as an amateur, people spoke highly of him. As a pro, he was out there. He was doing his thing. And then even in the first round, you know, he got a takedown. He was going for submissions. But then you see, okay, I got to walk back to the stool for the first time and the second time. And that can be an adrenaline dump. You can just realize your body, you know, you didn't spread out its energy and you're tired mentally. You know, you can maybe break. I don't know. But we have to see someone basically thwart his attack. But his first attack is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he's done great with what he's got so far. But I just don't feel like I don't think he needs to be rushed. I don't see why he can't take a little bit of break and then
he wants to fight in August, in mid August, and Dana White's warm to it. I agree. It's like, dude, you just banked two fights in 10 days. That mm-hmm. means two wins, two bonuses. Relax, kid, you know?
He can get better. That's the thing. Like, I don't understand why they need to just throw him right back in there. That's definitely a division that's not, like, hurting for stars at the top. I would just take your time here.
You see Dylan Danis trying to get cute and call him out?
He does that every card.
He sure does, but this one backfired because nobody was feeling him. Nobody was like... And Danis has only fought twice in 2 years, and this guy fought twice in 10 days, and that was basically everyone's bag. But in different written differently. But it was a good bag. Alex Oliveira defeated Peter Sabata. Decision. Good fight, though. Exciting. Unanimous. 30-27 across the board. Paul Craig defeated Gadzumurad Antigulov. Submission. Triangle choke.
That was legit.
How many... He's got to have about... Off the back, submissions don't happen that often anymore. But I remember Paul Craig. Let me see. He triangled this one. He rear naked choked Moreira. Well, here's Kennedy and Choskuwu or something like that is his name. That one was a triangle choke. Maybe what I'm watching is the highlights or something. When they say, coming up next. Yeah, look, he's got a few triangles, man. Like, it's amazing. Anyway. Paul Craig from Scotland. He always has those intimidating, you know, face-offs and stuff like that. And I've never been against Paul Craig. I've always liked him. He's 32 years of age. And this was a good win for him. Carla Esparza defeated Marina Rodriguez.
This was an interesting fight.
Yes.
Because I agree. I thought Carla won the fight. But she came very close to giving that fight away. And mostly it was due to going for those leg locks. She kept going for them. She wasn't really getting close with any of them. But she would give a position and almost lose rounds because of that. It was...
like the last 30 seconds to 45 seconds of every round, she went for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
She had already banked about 2 to 3 minutes of ground and pound, riding time. All she had to do was remain in that position, and basically she'd be up easily 10-9, 10-9. And then she puts Rodriguez in a position where she knows she's got to go for it. But now she leaves a little bit of doubt because Rodriguez would end each of those rounds with a little bit of some, you know, firepower, some ground and pound. And we weren't sure. Nobody was sure. Excuse me. But her corner told her, stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, on the feet, it didn't look like she had much to offer. Carla's improved her stand-up, but yeah, in no way should she be standing with Marina Rodriguez, especially when Marina Rodriguez is kind of easy to take down and keep down. That should have just been, look, this is the recipe here. Stick to the recipe. Carla Esparza got the win, and that's 4 in a row. It was a split decision. 229-28 going either way, but then they announced the 30-27. and it was pretty evident that's whose hand was going to be raised. Fabricio Werdum defeated Alexander Gustafsson. First round submission made it look pretty easy. I don't know why Gustafsson was such a favorite. Yeah, there was a rumor that he had broken his nose or something like that.
I think it's because of Fabricio's last fight. I think people just assume he's been gone for a long time, takes a loss. The guy doesn't have it anymore. But you're right. It shouldn't have been
somebody
that way.
Submitted Gustafsson recently. Who was it?
Submitted Gustafsson?
Yeah. He was submitted, and he made it look kind of... Was it Anthony Smith? Yeah, Anthony Smith submitted him. And Fabricio's just... Like, Fabricio on the ground is a nightmare. And Fabricio standing isn't bad. And then this guy's going up to fight a former heavyweight champion. If you would have told me, oh, it's a coin flip, minus 115 either way, or minus 110 either way, or even if you tell me, yeah, Gustafsson's a slight favorite, maybe I'd think age. Okay, Werdum didn't look good in his last, but he was like almost minus 300. Mm. Basically, it was like,
it's way too
to
much.
Me, it was tempting. I was like, I'm going with Werdum, and I'm going to go with Werdum by sub, because if Verdum's going to beat him, I mean, yeah, I suppose he could knock him out, but the sub just seems like more of the way, you know, to get there. And he got it. He made it look so easy, too. But apparently this is his last fight on the contract. He's already mentioning Fedor's name in the rematch. Bro, you beat him. Fedor should be mentioning you. You yeah. know?
It's a high-profile fight.
Unless he already knows fight. That's where he wants to go and that's where he's going to get paid and he's already building it, then sure, use the UFC platform to do it. But I say this, UFC, keep him. Why would you give him away?
He's a little bit older now. Uh-huh. Your heavyweight division's got a lot of fighters.
I think he's entertaining, and I think he's a tough man. Like, if you're going to keep the Arlovskis of the world around, then I don't see a problem with keeping the Werdums of the world around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the ones that kind of put over the other talent.
It's a guy that's used to making a lot of money.
Yeah, maybe Werdum's, you know what I mean? Saying, give me $1 million a fight. And they're like, fuck you. That's too much. Who knows? But I would make an attempt to keep him. No, Gustafsson didn't retire. He actually just basically said, hey, look, man, stuff goes down, all right? Stuff goes down in the octagon. But he said, keep an eye on my boy. And he was talking about Khamzat Chimaev, who trains out of that. I think it's called the All-Stars Gym up there in Sweden. And so he kept it short and sweet, but there was no retirement. He really takes the losses hard. But he did weigh in at 245 or something like that. I don't know if he loved not having to eat or what. I mean, he's 6'4". You know,
he didn't look bad. He knows his future at heavyweight, but I just don't think that's the spot for him.
He knows his future. I mean, look, I've lost to John Jones twice. What am I going to do? So, Mauricio Shogun Hua defeated Antonio Rogério Nogueira. I thought Nogueira got him, but my heart wasn't broken. I mean, it would have been nice for him to just get a win, but what do you do? Hey, I'm 1-2 against the guy. This is just the trilogy was a little silly. I guess it'd be nice to have a win, but, he didn't get it, and Hua did. It was a split decision. Neither guy looked great. Even Hua is saying, maybe I might retire too.
It was a close fight. Which would be
sad to lose those two and Fabricio Werdum from the UFC off the Pride purchase from 2006, 2007, I believe the deal went down.
It's the second best fight, right, out of the three. The first one was the best. The second one's probably the worst. The third one was probably in the middle. Mm-hmm. But it was decent. It was good. I had Shogun winning, but I could see it going to Nogueira.
Robert Whittaker defeated Darren Till in the main event, 48-47 across the board. I thought Till might have got him, but Whittaker had more strikes. That was the thing. Till seemed to have the bigger punches, maybe, or bigger exchanges. I don't know how to describe it. My heart wasn't broken because I predicted Whittaker was going to win, and I bet Whittaker was to win. Mm-hmm. But when they made the announcement, I go, I think I'm going to lose this fight.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I had one other person saying that, but for the most part, I thought it was Whittaker's fight.
1 and 3 were Darren Till, because I know one was when he couldn't even get near Darren Till. Till was using his length, his reach.
One for sure. I thought he did well. Three, I thought, was close.
Three's when he knocked him down and chicken-legged him. Except, again, Whittaker has such a high output.
Yeah.
But still, the number one criteria is the damage. So, I guess, am I saying round five, too? Well, one judge called it for round five, but then two of them didn't give him round three. They all came to the conclusion of 48-47, but it wasn't unanimous how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Whitaker, of course, wants to get his title back. Izzy says, I still want to fight Darren Till. And I wanted to jump in there and just be a dick and say, well, you never know. Jose Aldo lost his pivotal match and got a title shot. All you got to do is ask for it, you know, because that's what Henry Cejudo wanted. He wanted Jose Aldo, and they happened to be going to Brazil. And Dana White said, okay, makes sense to me. But, you know, I just wasn't in the mood. The decision was a decision. I can understand why Izzy might not want Whitaker. I mean, look, I just finished the guy. Why would I want him right now? Plus, he's got Costa, Cannonier, and
I don't think it needs
maybe
to
even
now.
Shabazian. If Shabazian looks good against Brunson, I'm not discounting Brunson, but if Shabazian does look good, you never know. He's making some noise too. And Ronda Rousey's his manager, so who knows? Maybe the politics get involved, folks. That was UFC on ESPN 14, Whitaker versus Till. The bonuses go to Fabricio Werdum, Paul Craig, Khamzat Chimaev, Jesse Ronson, Tom Aspinall, and Tanner Boser. No fight of the night was awarded. So what you got there is six bonuses. Does that make sense?
Say it again?
Six performance of the nights. Did you hear that?
Well, there were 15 cards or 15 fights.
Maybe that's what it was. Okay. Boser, Aspinall, Ronson, Chimaev, Craig, and Werdum. That'll work. I don't think I didn't. Man, that was a long night. I didn't stick around for no post-fight press conference. But if that's what they gave away, then that's what they gave away. Anyway, this weekend we have Brunson and Shabazian. Like I mentioned, we'll talk about that on our Thursday episode. Let's talk about Bellator a little bit. Goes they came back on Friday night in the main event. Sergio Pettis defeated Ricky Bandejas. I disagreed a little bit. I also had Pettis winning, but I thought he won 2-1. I thought Bandejas did enough to win round one. But I was okay with the decision, obviously. Mm-hmm. The judges saw it differently. And, I mean, quick reaction there, I guess. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think Pettis is looking pretty good. I think he's still improving. I think there's still room for that. I think he can be a fun Bellator fighter. I like the mood that he's in. Seems really happy over there. I thought it was great to see Bellator back. It had a couple little different wrinkles here and there that separated it maybe from what the UFC did. I thought it looked cool with the big curtain that they put up.
A lot of
up.
People were saying they liked their fight sphere area.
It looked better, I thought.
Yeah.
Honestly, I did think it looked better. It was pretty cool. But I think all of that comes from taking your time and watching everybody else, not just the UFC, but other sport leagues and kind of doing your interpretation of what you think you need to do to come back and do everything safely. And from everyone that I've spoken to that was involved with it, they said it had its couple little differences from the UFC here and there, but that for the most part, they did a good job. And I think maybe the fighters could probably appreciate safety being the utmost concern here. And now we're going to go through a little bit of a run of Bellator cards. So I think they alternate with Showtime boxing. It should be fun.
Jason Jackson defeated Jordan Mean, 30-27 there. Taiwan Claxton lost to J.J. Wilson. I thought I disagreed with that, and especially one judge had it 30-27 Claxton, one had it 30-27 J.J. Wilson, and then there was a 29-28 in favor of J.J. Wilson. I didn't see Claxton losing three rounds. I actually thought he won the fight, but whatever. Aaron Pico did look great, though, against Solo Hatley Jr., rear naked choke. Round one, down there in the prelims, Rafion Stotts, who we've covered back in Victory Fighting Championships, I believe it was called. He got a third round submission rear naked choke over Kaz Bell. But your overall thoughts of having Bellator back, were you excited?
I was excited.
Is your palate wanting more and more? Like, you know, do you wish, damn, it's too bad PFL pulled the plug a little early. Maybe they could have done something. When does one championship line up? You know, like the UFC was our only meal for like 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that not too many people were, it's not that they weren't excited about Bellator. It's just like, oh man, now I got to get into this. Because here's the problem is Bellator didn't come back with a card that popped.
Yeah.
They didn't come back with their big names. And I think if they would have done that, then people would have been, fuck yeah, Bellator, I'm ready, man. Sit down. Let's go. I'm having people, you know, whatever. The normal thing people said. But I think people were like, oh, they're back. Oh, you know, but there wasn't much promotion to it. There wasn't much lead up. They only announced it with like a week to go. And then there wasn't like that big name that draws you in.
I think maybe people had that reaction because they didn't really, Bellator didn't give you much. You know, when they showed up and they said, all right, we're going to do a card. It just kind of came out of nowhere. You know what? There's a card next week. Mm-hmm. Okay, ready to roll. Like, they didn't really build it up or nothing like that. I don't know why they did that.
Me neither.
But I'm glad that they're back. I think it's fun. As far as PFL, like, I don't know. You got to remember, if you're a sports fan right now, you're going to have to be able to consume hockey, baseball, basketball, all at the same time. And then football is going to drop out of nowhere. Now you have the UFC back, Bellator back. So a lot's going to be happening. I don't know if I'm salivating at getting PFL back. But I think PFL can maybe look at what these other two are doing. And maybe this is that little topic that we had where we said, did they pull the plug a little too early? Could they have maybe just waited this out a little bit more? Because I think it could have maybe been possible to pull off now looking at the way they do it.
I saw an ESPN report where Lance Palmer's looking to maybe get out of his contract. And
That's I wouldn't say it's a huge star for PFL. But it's a
two-time champ, but
yeah,
his fights haven't been like,
it's not like you go back and you go, oh man, remember Lance Palmer versus, like, he doesn't have that much, but because he's won it twice,
right? And his last year he beat the same guy three times, the way it all worked out. So like, there wasn't like a, well, he beat me once and I beat him once, you know, nothing like that. I like Lance. He talks up a really, really good game. I enjoy interviewing him. It's not like he doesn't have any hands, but he usually resorts to his bread and butter, and he dominates, and it's really, really hard to stop him. But
he can have a home. I don't see anybody that wouldn't want him. The question is, are you going to make more money than what you would make making $1 million every year at PFL? I don't think he's going to get that kind of money.
Yeah. All right, listen. This week we got Invicta FC 41. That's on July 30th, so that's Thursday. We got one championship on July 31st. That's Friday, but remember, with the time difference, it's early morning. You got LFA 87. That's at night. We all know UFC Fight Pass, Friday nights. And then on Saturday, UFC on ESPN plus 31, Brunson versus Shabazian. Then the following Tuesday is Dana White Contender Series. So things are really, really, they're in full swing. Also on Bellator, they announced that their next card is on August 7th, and that's Chandler versus Henderson 2. Now, see, that's an announcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of what I want to see. So that was pretty cool. And then there was one other fight that got made that I want to talk about. Not talk about, but just say it. It's Juliana Pena's back. She is going to be fighting Jermaine Durandamy. And here's why that's notable. Because Irene Aldana, who's the first guest on Hablemos MMA, don't forget to check that out. It dropped today, the first episode in Spanish. Depending on what she told Danny, we're looking to see who's going to fight Amanda Nunes next. And with Aspen Ladd out, if Irene Aldana doesn't come back too soon, then that might open the door for Juliana Pena. You never know. Jermaine Durandamy already had her shot. So if she wins, she kind of spoils the party. I don't think she's going to fight Amanda again. But what were you going to say?
No, I said it could be. That could be the scenario.
Yeah. All right, folks, check out MMA Junkie throughout the week. There's a lot to talk about, not just from the cards that took place in Yas Island, but also from, sorry, I got distracted here. Sorry, but all the fights cards that, you know, that we just told you are coming up this week. We'll have full coverage there at MMA Junkie. Goes can be followed on Twitter and Instagram at The Goes. I'm at MMA Junkie George. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And don't forget that on Wednesdays, we're over on Sportscaster. It's sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. It's basically the MMA Junkie Radio show for an hour with a guest and in video form. So don't miss out. In the meantime, we're going to bounce on out of here. Enjoy your Monday and always be a champion.